The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online, along with a free £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm James Heal. I'm joined today by Katie Balls and Isabel Hartman. Now, Katie, it was quite a feisty PMQs today with Keir Starmer, of course, keen to talk about Liz Truss. We can have a clip of that here.
The former Prime Minister has a long list of people to blame for the economic misery. They don't want to hear it. They made her Prime Minister. And millions of people are paying the price. She's got a long list of people to blame. She blames the Governor of the Bank of England, the Treasury, the Office for Budget Responsibility. The American President is blamed at one point. We even learned that the poor old lettuce was part of the deep state.
What do you make of this whole exchange?
I think it was quite predictable that Keir Starmer would go on Liz Truss, given Jonathan Ashworth walked around the press lobby yesterday giving out printed booklets of Labour's own version of 10 years to save the West, which was more along of 10 years, you know, 13 years of ruining a country thanks to the Tories, and having a picture on the front which is half of Liz Truss's face merged with half of Rishi Sunak's. And then trying to also, something Isabel's written about a lot, which is the fact that Labour really want to attack this idea that the Tories want to abolish national insurance, try and say they are being loose with the economy once again. And they had gone through the book and found a page where Liz Truss was a bit rude about national insurance and suggested she thought it was a bad tax that shouldn't exist, and therefore said, well, look, we were right all along, Rishi Sunak is enacting a Liz Truss policy, which I do think is a stretch, but it is consistent with what they're trying to do, which is bring things back to Liz Truss as much as possible, try and suggest Liz Truss still has a, you know, influence over Downing Street, and more, probably more convincingly, the Tory party. I don't think she has much influence over Downing Street, but generally in the sense she's still in the Tory party. And therefore, with all the options he had, I think on the week that Liz Truss has been doing this media extravaganza, going for the former Prime Minister made sense. I think what was more interesting was how did Rishi Sunak deal with that? And lots of people say, oh, he should have done more than previously to distance himself from Boris Johnson, such as the Partygate report. Should he have voted ultimately when it came to what the Privileges Committee should do? He's been accused of skirting the issue there, not to upset Summoner's party. And on Liz Truss, should he have been more critical? I think that in PMQs, he ultimately defended his economic record, and he said that he had been warning for a long time about Liz Truss and had said that Truss's economic policies were wrong, which is true. If you think about the leadership contest, and we're talking the first leadership contest, the one which went to the members, Rishi did not manage to convince the membership that he was right, but he did repeatedly say, you know, that she was living in fiction, that her tax cuts would be a danger to the economy. You had lots of warnings about things that actually at the time were really dismissed as Project Fear, but did come to pass. So in a way, I think it's interesting, given that, that it doesn't feel, I think, in the public that Rishi Sunak, yes, he's not seen as a Liz Truss lackey, but I'm not sure he gets particular credit for distancing himself from Liz Truss, despite the fact that he is correct to say he has criticised her project long before it actually went wrong.
Because it's still her party, right? That, you know, you can only distance yourself so much from someone when you wear the same rosette. And I think that's the calculation that Labour's taking. But it did, as you say, Katie, give Rishi Sunak a good riposte to Starmer at PMQs, not just that he'd warned about the consequences of Liz Truss's economic policies at the time, but that he could now say with that confidence that Labour's economic policies were going to be as disastrous too. And I felt that was an effective response to that. But as you say, it was, you know, it was a classic political knockabout. Both parties' attack units had clearly been working on today's Prime Minister's questions. We did get some of the old friendly lines. We did get Labour in Wales at one point. And we also got Hizbut Tahrir and Keir Starmer defending them. I thought it was really interesting the defence that Keir Starmer mounted of Angela Rayner. Given this PMQs was started off with two men arguing about two women, Keir Starmer said, he said a billionaire prime minister and a billionaire, we couldn't quite hear what he said, whose families have avoided paying their taxes, smearing a working class woman, which was quite a powerful line. And also, given some of the dynamics between the Labour leader and his deputy, quite a forceful one as well.
And elsewhere, there was news that inflation has fallen slightly to 3.2%. Katie, I mean, the government won't be shouting this from the rooftop necessarily, but it is more good news and perhaps a sign perhaps that they're heading in the right direction.
Yeah, I think it's unsurprising in the sense that we know where inflation is projected to get to. We know it could get down to the target of 2% by the summer. And I think that therefore, you know, even if there's a blip and it goes up slightly, everyone thinks the trajectory is down. The big question is, well, this is going to prompt the Bank of England to cut rates. And we are back to Liz Truss here, because I think Liz Truss saying this week that the Bank of England governor should be sacked, Andrew Bailey, is probably particularly unhelpful, because speaking to figures in the Tory party today who are far away from Liz Truss and what they're thinking, there is a growing frustration that the Bank of England has not cut rates yet. I think if the Bank of England does not cut rates, of course they're independent, you will start to see MPs across the party wanting to criticise Andrew Bailey. I think Liz Truss making it almost attached to the trust project in her interviews this week makes it harder for them to do so without looking as though it's almost this kind of Tory agenda linked to her premiership.
Now, we've talked a lot about Tories so far today, but there's an interesting story in The Times talking about Keir Starmer's comments to his aide and warning that he's going to sack any of them if there's any briefing against the people who are part of his team, most notably, of course, his chief of staff, Sue Gray. Isabel, what do you make of this?
Well, I mean, before we started, we were discussing how successful this is going to be and whether it'd just be easier to shut down the whole of the press gallery in Parliament instead, because you are always, even at the start of a government when everyone's really fired up about the political project, going to get people briefing against each other, because people in every walk of life have fundamentally different ideas about how to do things. And the difference between normal companies or parish councils or allotment committees is that in politics, there are actually people who are going to listen to that moaning. And what makes this, what amplifies this still further, is that people have heard of Sue Gray. She's like a household name. And that's one of the reasons Keir Starmer wanted her. But it means that when people complain about her, journalists are much more likely to write it up because their editors are interested. You know, I used to get Labour people of all stripes complaining about her predecessor, who was called Sam White. I don't know what Keir Starmer's got for sort of people with colours as their surname, but that, you know, people used to complain about him the whole time to me and tell me all sorts of bitchy stories. But no one was interested because literally no one had heard of this guy, which I think was part of the problem. You know, that is what comes with the territory of having a high profile poach like Sue Gray. I also absolutely love a story that is prefaced with "don't leak this," making its way into the media. But I do think that if you're going to try to stop your aides from briefing against each other, you're going to lose a lot of time, because there are other things you are more likely to be successful at.
Yes, famously one occasion, Harold Wilson read his cabinet the riot act and it's about leaks. And as he left Number 10 later that day, he saw the Evening Standard front page where it said, "Wilson warns cabinet over leaks." So tale of as old as time, perhaps. But Katie, can you put some like sort of context on this? Obviously, we've had some famously dysfunctional backroom operations in recent years. You know, Number 10, there was the Dominic Cummings and all of that spilled out. I mean, what are relations like between members of the sort of Starmer team and the rest of the Labour HQ?
Well, I think if you look at what he said, and it was a story from Patrick McGuire, who was on the podcast on Friday talking about former prime ministers. Effectively, he was talking about briefing against his advisers generally, so not just Sue Gray. And then he also dismissed claims that there's a boys' club that is in charge of the Labour Party. And this all does relate back to Sue Gray, because effectively, around the time of Sue Gray's appointment, you started hearing reports of Sue Gray versus the boys. And that is something that has not really gone away. And you will speak to some members, and obviously, we'll protect all identities because we don't want them to be sacked, who do feel as though there are, you know, men making key decisions. Now, that does frustrate some of the people who work closely with Keir Starmer, because they will say it's actually quite rude to some of the senior women that everyone just keeps writing up about, oh, the men deciding, what about them? But also, if someone's perception is that the reason they're not doing X is because of that person, they're also probably entitled to their opinion. And therefore, you end up in this endless staff talking about staff. I think you take a step back Keir Starmer, like I think probably most prime ministers, does not want his aides gossiping about each other and that filling the papers rather than more important discussions to voters. I think there's a sense it looks self-indulgent, but I think it is one of those things where if you're at your high point where effectively no one wants to lose a job, you look as though you're in the strongest position, no one does want to do anything which is going to, cause an issue. But of course, I think it doesn't really matter what the party or the leader is. Eventually, as things become more tricky, you tend to get more briefing. So I think you have a tight ship early on. And I think therefore probably Keir Starmer thinks, I should be having that tight ship very now, given where things are. And as things get trickier, that's when you tend to get more. For example, I am personally surprised, or I think it's a testament to Rishi Sunak's number 10, that if you think about when Theresa May's premiership was in trouble, when Boris Johnson's premiership was in trouble, there was so much internal briefing, particularly the Boris Johnson number 10 near the end. You know, it was just like these characters all turning on one another. Yes, you get some things, but there's, in comparison, very little number 10 aide versus number 10 aide briefings under Rishi Sunak. And I think trying to get your team to a place where when you have problems, they don't start, you know, turning one another in the press is clearly something that is quite important to try to do.
Thank you, Isabel. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening to Coffee Hour Shots.